Welcome to your midday NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Although weakened, Hurricane Dorian is not over yet. It has once again strengthened into a major Category 3 hurricane. The storm's projected path has been updated and has the center of Dorian moving near or over the coast of South Carolina today.
As of 8 a.m. this morning, Dorian had sustained winds of 115 miles per hour. The National Hurricane Center warned of life-threatening storm surge and dangerous winds. Tropical storm, hurricane, and storm surge watches and warnings are in effect from Georgia to Virginia. According to forecasters, over 1 million people in parts of South Carolina and North Carolina remain under mandatory evacuation, while residents in Florida and the Bahamas are beginning to regroup. An official in the Bahamas reported that Dorian took the lives of at least 20 people, this after it flattened several islands with Category 5 winds for more than a day. The Bahamas Minister of Health, Dwayne Sands, said that 17 people died on the Abaco Islands, while three died on Grand Bahama Island. He said three victims died after being taken to a hospital in New Providence.
My island of Abaco is finished. Everything is gone. No banks, no stores, no nothing. It'll take at least 4 to 5 years to complete only Marshall, but I don't know how long it'll take for the rest of the island, but nothing is here. Nothing at all. Everything is gone. Just bodies.
The Red Cross says 1,300 homes in the Bahamas were damaged or completely destroyed. Meteorologists are warning that the storm could regain its Category 4 status within the next 24 hours because it is hovering over warm waters, a key ingredient to a hurricane's strength.
And in health news, fewer people are overdosing on drugs, but the opioid crisis is far from over. The Trump administration announced new funding yesterday that will help with data collection on overdose deaths. It also announced more funding for prevention, treatment, and recovery.
These funds will be delivered to the communities where the help is most needed.
$900 million will be given to 47 states, two territories, and Washington, D.C. to help collect data on drug overdoses.
This money will help states and local communities track overdose data and develop strategies that save lives.
$301 million will be awarded this year and the rest over the next 2 years. In 2017, the most recent year for which the CDC has data, 68% of all overdose deaths involved opioids. Health Secretary Alex Azar said opioid-related overdose deaths went down by 5% between 2017 and 2018. The federal government will also give $932 million to all 50 states in the form of state opioid response grants. The grants are for prevention, treatment, and recovery.
That can mean everything from expanding the use of medication-assisted treatment in criminal justice settings or in rural areas via telemedicine.
This is the grant's second year. Funding last year was also $932 million, but was later supplemented with another $436 million. Holly Kellum, NTD News.
The U.S. yesterday sanctioning a network of firms and ships that supplied Syria with oil in an oil-for-terror scheme, a breach of U.S. sanctions on Iran. The network was allegedly directed by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or IRGC. At the same time, the U.S. State Department is prepared to reward $15 million to anyone who can help disrupt the Corps' financial operations.
The U.S. action intensified a maximum pressure campaign aimed at driving Iran's oil exports, the country's main source of income, to zero.
The IRGC has been running an illicit petroleum shipping network over the last several months. This network has moved hundreds of millions of dollars worth of illicit oil. That money is then used to fund terrorism.
U.S. Special Representative for Iran, Brian Hook, explained the network used over a dozen tankers to export nearly 10 million barrels of crude oil to Syria to support Assad. Hook also announced that the State Department is offering a $15 million reward for any person who can help disrupt the financial operations of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps and Quds Force, a unit within the IRGC.
The IRGC and the Quds Force were designated as a foreign terrorist organization in April. And this put them in the same category as many of the terrorist groups that they actively support, such as Hezbollah and Hamas. The IRGC trains, funds, and equips proxy organizations across the Middle East.
President Trump withdrew from the 2015 nuclear deal last year to take a harder line on Iran via sanctions. Iran has since been reducing its compliance with the deal to pressure Europe, claiming compensation for the severe damage to its economy from the sanctions.
In an update on the dramatic boat fire earlier this week, divers have recovered the bodies of all but one of the 34 people who were killed when the boat they were sleeping in erupted in flames near Santa Cruz, California.
Details of the victims, who ranged in age from 17 to 60, emerged while authorities worked to identify the remains of the 33 people recovered so far, using a DNA analysis tool that is primarily employed in war zones to generate results quickly. The Conception's captain and four crew members were above deck when the blaze broke out early on Monday and escaped in an inflatable boat. The wreckage now rests 60 feet below the surface. Father-daughter pair Scott and Kendra Chan are believed to be among those killed. Scott was a high school physics teacher in Fremont, California, while Kendra was a marine biologist. Santa Barbara locals have set up a waterfront memorial to honor the victims and their loved ones.
It's incredibly tragic. I mean, we don't know, and we probably won't know for a long time.
Several reported looking to God for strength and a desire to comfort victims' families.
It's quite hard. It really is.
National Transportation Safety Board member Jennifer Homendy said 16 investigators were already assigned to the probe, including specialists in operations, engineering, survival factors, and fire analysis. The investigation is ongoing.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says much more must be done to realize the Hong Kong people's aspirations after the city's leader yesterday announced the withdrawal of an extradition bill, sparking months of protests. We also hear from scholars at a congressional hearing on the recent events.
U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi Wednesday issued a statement on the withdrawal of Hong Kong's extradition bill. She said much more must be done to fully realize the legitimate aspirations of the Hong Kong people, as guaranteed under one country, two systems. She also said Congress looks forward to swiftly advancing the bipartisan Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act to reaffirm the U.S. commitment to democracy, human rights, and the rule of law in the face of Beijing's crackdown. During a congressional hearing the same day, held by the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, scholars spoke about Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam's announcement.
The chief executive, Carrie Lam, suspended the bill on June 15. She refused for 2.5 months to withdraw the bill until early this morning. This concession is too little too late.
Professor Tin Bor Hui believes that the most important demand of the Hong Kong people is now an independent investigation of police abuses.
The most important demand for Hong Kong people now is not just that the bill is formally withdrawn, because for 2.5 months she's been hiding behind police officers who've been beating up people, breaking the bones. And so the second demand among the five demands is to have an independent investigation into police abuses.
Pro-democracy activists are insisting on the remaining four of their five demands, not one less, to set up an independent inquiry to pro-police brutality. Withdraw the characterization of protests as riots. Release those arrested at protests. Implement universal suffrage in Hong Kong.
We've lost a chance. The situation in Hong Kong is very serious now. It is because the government has led us to this grim situation.
Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
Pro-democracy lawmakers criticizing Carrie Lam's latest comments on her decision to withdraw the controversial extradition bill.
Lam said in a news conference Thursday the extradition bill will be formally withdrawn without the need for a debate or a vote. She was repeatedly questioned about why it took her so long to withdraw the bill despite increasingly violent protests, but skirted around the issue.
There's not exactly correct to describe this as a change of mind. You will remember on the 15th of June, and that is only within a few days, I announced the suspension of the bill. And of course, I also say that the legislative work on this bill will come to an end. And then in early July, in light of the worries about what is going to happen to this bill, I said the bill is dead. Okay. So as far as the substance is concerned, there is simply no plan to take forward the bill in light of the controversy.
Lam added that full withdrawal of the bill was a decision made by her government with Beijing's backing. When asked why she did not appoint any pro-democracy members to the Independent Police Complaints Council, Lam said she couldn't disclose the appointment procedure. Later that afternoon, Lam left for China's Guangxi province for a business trip. Withdrawal of the bill meets one of the protesters' five key demands, but activists have vowed not to yield until the government fulfills all of them. Wu Zhiwai, chairman of the Democratic Party, said that Lam had already missed her best chance to withdraw the bill, and if she continued to evade the remaining demands, she would only extend the current conflict. Pro-democracy camp convener Claudia Mo criticized Lam for being a broken tape recorder, for failing to apologize to Hong Kongers and address the differences in public opinion.
No, it's her no care about Hong Kong public opinion. Everyone, including her own friends, her own cronies, have advised her that we would need this independent inquiry over police brutality.
Further protests are planned, including on Saturday, another stress test at the airport. NTD News.
China and the United States today agreed to hold trade talks early October amid fears that an escalating trade war could trigger a global economic recession. The talks were agreed to in a phone call between China's vice premier, the U.S. Trade Representative, and the U.S. Treasury Secretary. Trade teams from the two countries will hold talks in mid-September before the high-level talks next month. Earlier this week, Beijing objected to a new round of tariffs imposed by the United States. President Trump warned on Tuesday he would be tougher on Beijing in a second term if trade talks dragged on. Meanwhile, Washington plans to increase the tariff rate to 30% from the 25% duty already in place on the $250 billion worth of Chinese imports from October 1st. A suicide bomber blew himself up today in the center of Kabul, the Afghan capital. The blast killed at least 10 people and wounded over 40.
The blast rattled windows and doors in an area near embassies and government buildings. According to officials, cars and shops were destroyed in an area near Afghanistan's NATO force headquarters and the U.S. embassy.
I was in the car alongside my sons when I heard the blast. One of my sons was injured in the face. My brother, who was driving the car, was also injured in the neck, and I don't know what happened to him anymore.
The Taliban claimed responsibility for the attack. This comes despite them being in negotiation with U.S. officials on a new deal for a U.S. troop withdrawal in exchange for Taliban security guarantees.
We had just arrived at this area when the explosion occurred. All of our car windows were broken, and I don't know what happened next. We were not in good condition when the people came and got us out of the car.
Witnesses said the suicide bomber set himself off as hundreds of people were standing by or crossing the road. Even with a U.S.-Afghanistan deal in progress, there has been no let-up of violence in the country.
South African companies MTN and ShopRite closed stores in Nigeria on Wednesday after attacks on their facilities in the country, a retaliation after days of riots in South Africa, chiefly targeting foreign-owned, including Nigerian, businesses.
Foreign-owned businesses in South Africa and Nigeria are under siege, leading major businesses to close their doors on Wednesday. South Africa's MTN and ShopRite closed stores in Nigeria on Wednesday after their facilities were attacked. That was in retaliation for riots in South Africa that targeted foreign-owned companies, including Nigerian businesses. Nigeria is telecoms operator MTN's biggest market and accounts for a third of the South African group's core profit. Supermarket chain ShopRite said several stores in South Africa, Nigeria and Zambia were closed, and extensive damage had been caused over the past 24 hours. South African police have arrested almost 300 people and confirmed several deaths after the conflict in Johannesburg and the capital Pretoria in recent days. Meanwhile, its president Cyril Ramaphosa told officials and business leaders also on Wednesday that he was committed to quelling attacks on foreigners that have threatened to cast a cloud over an economic forum aimed at boosting intra-African trade. This latest wave of unrest in South Africa rekindled memories of violence and strained diplomatic relations with Nigeria. Though it's unclear what ignited the latest round of riots in South Africa, high unemployment frustration with limited economic opportunities have been cited as possible triggers. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said Tuesday he was urgently sending a special envoy to meet with Ramaphosa to secure the safety of lives and property.
The rainforests of Indonesia's Borneo Island are a treasure trove of plant and animal species, including the endangered orangutans. But with a plan to move the capital from Jakarta to the region, conservationists fear the orangutans are at further risk.
Jakarta is sinking, overpolluted, and running out of water. Those are some reasons Indonesia's president has decided to move the country's capital to here, Borneo Island. It's some 1,200 miles northeast of Jakarta, and soon these remote forests will be transformed into a global city. But with the new territory comes new problems. The vast expanses of the rainforest here in Kalimantan province are inhabited by orangutans, and conservationists fear the move and the deforestation that comes with it will put the already endangered species at more risk.
We need information on the relocation so that we can make our efforts to conserve the orangutans. There will be challenges in the area, as this place will be accessed by many people in the future.
But it's not just animals that are at risk of losing their homes. Many longtime human residents are too. They don't own the land they live on, and land speculation will likely drive up prices. According to a local paper, asking prices for land has already surged four times since the announcement.
I hope we will not be marginalized. We hope we can get some benefits too with this decision to relocate the capital.
Kalimantan was once almost completely covered by rainforests, but illegal logging has rapidly stripped much of it away. The government has stressed that no construction will take place in the region's protected areas. Relocation of the new capital is set to begin in 2024.
Google is agreeing to pay a record $170 million settlement over allegations that YouTube violated laws protecting children's privacy online.
The Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, and the City of New York accused Google's YouTube of illegally selling ads targeted at children in order to increase revenue.
Our complaint alleges numerous instances in which YouTube and Google had actual knowledge of the child-directed nature of channels and videos on the YouTube platform.
Under the agreement, Google will pay $136 million to the FTC and $34 million to the New York Attorney General's office. The $170 million settlement is the largest since a law banning collecting information about children under the age of 13 came into effect in 1998.
A penalty of this magnitude sends a strong signal about the importance of children's privacy.
The settlement also calls for YouTube to require the creators of children's videos to declare whether or not the content is targeted at kids.
Cases of young people getting severe lung injuries potentially caused by vaping or e-cigarettes is raising great concern for parents and lawmakers. NTD's Penny Zhou spoke with a specialist about the risks and his suggestions.
215 possible cases across 25 states. This is the number of lung illnesses that involves use of vaping devices this summer. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention says the symptoms often include coughing, shortness of breath, chest pain, and vomiting. Health officials in Illinois and Oregon have even reported cases of death related to e-cigarette use. The product is often being marketed as a way for chronic smokers to quit. But Dr. Daniel Sturman, director of pulmonary medicine at NYU Langone Health, said that even that practice is still controversial and something he usually does not recommend to patients.
Really don't know what the long-term effects are going to be.
However, he said vaping is getting extremely popular among teenagers, who are also more vulnerable to the risks it may pose.
At a time when their bodies are developing, when their lungs are susceptible to damage, when they may not have the ability to correct this damage.
He said although there has only been a smattering of cases so far of young people ending up in the intensive care unit, he worries that we will see more of such cases.
I think it's frightening.
And because e-cigarettes are not as intrusive or irritating as ordinary cigarettes, Dr. Sturman said users may unconsciously take in more doses of nicotine. He said the problem deserves bigger societal attention and government actions. But before any regulations take effect, Dr. Sturman suggested parents should have an open conversation with their kids about the risks.
Especially when their friends are using these products, and the last thing they want is having dad come over and ruin their fun time with their friends. But the reality is, if you don't have these conversations, you're not going to know if your kids are using them. Again, the fact that they're so unobtrusive, their kids are not going to have the cigarette smell on their breath. Their clothes are not going to smell that way, especially if they're using flavored products.
CDC last week warned that e-cigarette products should not be used by youth, young adults, pregnant women, as well as adults who do not currently use tobacco products. The state of Michigan, this Wednesday, September 4th, becomes the first U.S. state to ban the sales of flavored cigarettes, citing the product's appeal to kids. Penny Zhou, NTD News.
From impressive to mind-boggling, the new stars of the Guinness World Records 2020 are here.
From the U.S., Getty Kahayova has earned her place for the Guinness World Records title for the largest hula hoop spun for a female, with her ability to spin a 17-foot titanium hula hoop with ease. And from the U.K., Lisa and Chris Pittman hold the record for most pine boards broken in 1 minute with one hand. Working as a team, the couple smashed more than 500 blocks in under a minute. Lisa was 230 and Chris was 315. Also in England, Kevin Nix smashed a record as well, creating the fastest garden shed, which can zoom around the English roads at speeds up to 80 miles per hour. He broke the record by traveling at a whopping 80.67 miles per hour.
And that's all for today's NTD Midday News. Join us again this evening. I'm Tiffany Meyer.